Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, we made it. It's Kaldheim time.
That is the exact phrase I was ready to say to you with whatever question you lobbed my way, as you do in this intro. It's we made it, Ben. It's almost 19 episodes from like Crash Course to Crash Course. I think that is the longest stretch of any format we've had since we started the podcast.
Yeah, it was a haul. And I think we put out some great all-timer episodes here towards the end when we were doing level up style episodes, but it is nice to be able to dive into some fresh cards.
I think this is the stuff that we do best, or we get to do best, or that I feel like we like to do. Like the off the cuff, we don't know what the other person thinks about the cards, us coming to the set reviews, the crash course, the early impressions episodes with our own experiences, and like going toe to toe and, you know, having disagreements, but also trusting the other person. I think that's, at least for my money, that's my favorite stuff to get to do with you.
Absolutely. We've already done it with a card accidentally, and we'll bring it to you here in the show.
Yeah, it's in these episodes when we're prepping before we record that one of us has to say to the other person, let's save it for the show. We're already blowing it for the podcast. So today we are going to be looking at as many commons and uncommons as we can that have been spoiled already. It's January 17th, fresh on this Sunday morning. I got my cup of coffee here and I'm ready to go toe-to-toe with you here, Ben. So we're going to look at as many cards as we can. We'll sort of umbrella them under the mechanics, look at the color pairs, maybe try and figure out what they're trying to do, look at some cards that have maybe stumped us, return to one of my favorite little segments that we're going to have in these episodes, which is this great or garbage? But before we get into all that good stuff, got a few housekeeping things to take care of. First things first is the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where you can go to give back to the show if you so choose. And when a new set is coming out, this is the time to get in on the Discord, which is what every patron gets access to via that Patreon page. The Discord is hopping, popping. Of course, we're talking about all the preview cards in there for Kaldheim. Once the set drops, we're going to have all of the subcategories that we have for that channel in there. So you'll be able to see the what's the build, what's the play, draft log review. And most important, I think, for you and me, Ben, is that trophy channel, baby.
Ooh, yeah. Great place to go and look and see what's winning early on in the format.
Yeah, so you can guarantee that the Lords of Limited Discord, like it always does, is going to break the format wide open in the first few days, first week of drafts. And if you want to be in on that conversation, the Patreon page is the place to go to get in on it. And of course, we want to welcome each and every one of our new patrons the first week that they join. And this week, we are welcoming Puck, Fabian, Chris, Marcus, Jerome, Alberto, Mark, Jordan, and John. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Can I go sign up for the Patreon? That was very energetic. I'm all mobilized to go get on the Lords of Limited Patreon.
Ben, I'm very excited to be able to talk about new cards. It's been many weeks where I've been waiting for this opportunity. I'm hyped.
Yeah, in addition to the Patreon, this podcast is now also brought to you by CFB, channelfireball.com. They've got a bunch of sweet stuff going on there. First and foremost is the Kaldheim release party. So we talked about it a little bit last week, but if you haven't heard, Channel Fireball is bringing the pre-release experience to your home. Kaldheim release party is going to be a place for you to hang out, crack some packs, get advice on seal decks, play games via spell table, and so much more. And that's going to take place in this Channel Fireball Discord on February 6th. In addition to that, CFB Pro still happening. And again, new set, great time to get in on CFB Pro. You and I have both written articles. Alex is going to be writing some articles on the limited end of things, previewing Kaldheim stuff. So as always, make sure you're considering joining CFB Pro. In addition to that, we just kicked off a newsletter and your first one aired on this past Saturday.
Yeah, so you and I are going to be trading off each week, but it's going to be under the Lords of Limited umbrella. You can be guaranteed that. So every Saturday, we're going to be throwing out our Limited Lounge newsletter, just like a nice little short article. And that's free to sign up for. So if you go over to channelfireball.com, you can sign up for the newsletter and it's awesome. You're going to get that little nice bit of free magic content in your email inbox each and every day. And on Saturdays, it'll be from us.
Yep. CFB Extra is the name of that newsletter. X as in XTRA extra.
Nice.
And when you do anything over at Channel Fireball, please, 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 please make sure you use code LOL to let them know that we sent you over there.
All right, Ben, we got a lot of stuff to talk about to jam into the next hour here. Let's start off with the mechanics of Kaldheim. And as I said in the article that I wrote this week for Channel Fireball, it feels like they're getting us ready for like Time Spiral Remastered or something, because there is so much going on in the set.
There are a lot of words. Can confirm. I spent a lot of time with all the preview cards yesterday prepping for my archetype deep dive for my article, and I had a headache at the end of the 3 or 4 hour session.
That's the expert analysis that you get here. A lot of words here, folks. A lot of reading to do. Okay, so we've got four like headliner mechanics here that we're going to outline. Fortell, Boast, Snow, and Sagas. Why don't you kick things off with Fortell here, Ben?
Yeah, so Fortell is essentially similar to Morph, but for any type of card, instant sorceries, creatures, you name it. So if a card has Fortell, on your turn, you can pay 2 and exile it from your hand face down. And then on a later turn, you can cast it for its Fortell cost. So you can't Fortell a card and then cast it for its Fortell cost in the same turn. You've got to be setting it up for a future turn. So we've got a card here, for example, Doomscar Oracle. This is 2 and a white for a 3/2 human cleric. And whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you gain 2 life. And it has Fortell for a white. So instead of just casting it as a 2 and a white 3/2, you can pay 2 during some turn, and then on a future turn, you can pay single white to cast it from your exile zone face down and turn it face up and put it in play.
So I think some important things to outline for Fortell, at least so far, you're never going to get a cost reduction. Like the 2 CMC to Fortell the spell and then whatever it costs to flip up as the spell out of the Fortell exile zone, that's going to add up to the CMC, or sometimes it'll be greater than the CMC. So sometimes, like, you know, a card will cost 5, but the Fortell cost will be 4. So then 2 + 4 = 6, right? That's greater than 5. Okay, some quick math there for you. So
quick maths.
So my question to you, Ben, is what are the implications of a mechanic like this on a limited environment? And it feels like a lot. This seems to me like it's going to be the most impactful of the things that exist in Kaldheim.
I mean, Snow is a huge player too, but I mean, yes, this is going to be a huge part of everything you're doing when you construct your draft decks. I think the first thing that comes to mind is managing your curve and fitting Fortell cards into your curve. It completely changes how you think of a mana curve in your limited deck, and I am very excited to explore all those different possibilities.
Right, yeah, because, so, you know, we're going to keep making these comparisons to Morph until I think we get our hands on it, because that's the easiest, you know, if you go back to our card evaluation VAST method, this is the analog comparison here, the A of VAST is to Morph as a mechanic. And the thing that Morph did, at least specifically in Khans of Tarkir, the most recent time they brought it back, was it, like, just changed the landscape of the environment. Like, you knew everybody was going to always have this 3-mana 2/2, and so the format slowed down a little bit, and then there was this, like, sub deck, the Ben Wernie deck, this blue green tempo deck that preyed on everyone playing 3-mana 2/2s, and your deck was full of 2-mana 2/2s and 2-mana 2/1s to sort of like get ahead of that curve and out tempo people. And I keep trying to think of how could that work with Fortell, and I haven't come up with anything yet.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. There are cards that are seeded to let you double spell pretty effectively, I think. You know, there's some good one drops, and there are Fortell cards that have, you know, one as their Fortell cost, the Doomscar Oracle that we saw there as our example card. Mm-hmm. You know, so you could potentially Fortell something on turn 2, and then on turn 3, you could flip up, you know, if your Fortell cost was 1, Fortell another card. It'll be interesting to see the different ways that you can fit a curve together with Fortell.
Right. If you can chain stuff together, it feels like you really don't fall that far behind. So if on turn 2, you're going to Fortell, you know, for example, the card you read, Doomscar Oracle, and then on turn 3, you pay 1 for that 3/2, it even gains you a little bit of life, right? If you cast your second spell, so you could cast a 2-drop that turn, or you could just then chain together Fortell stuff. You're like, all right, 1 mana to cast my 3/2, and then 2 mana to then exile another thing. And then on turn 4, I flip that up maybe for 2 mana and then Fortell something else. So if you can chain them together, it really feels like that, you know, that one turn of you taking off to Fortell something doesn't punish you that much.
Right. And Wizards does know, I think, that this affects the curve. There's a whole color pair deck kind of that feels seated with Fortell that cares about you casting 2 spells in a turn, which is pretty sweet. So we'll take a look at that a little later.
Yeah. So a couple more questions here before we read a few more cards. Does Fortell make combat tricks better or worse in your mind?
I think it makes them better to a certain extent. The combat tricks that have Fortell certainly are going to be more flexible. I mean, Fortell makes anything better than it normally would be, right? Because you have alternate casting costs. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting playing around Fortell cards, right? Because there is removal that has Fortell. There's combat tricks that have Fortell. And there's going to be treasure tokens floating around that are even going to make, you know, if your opponent has a treasure token and they've got a multicolored deck, it's going to be really hard to read what that Fortell card is potentially.
Right, yeah. Treasures? I forgot treasures were in the set too. There's so much going on. So yeah, I think the best Fortell cards for my money are almost certainly going to be instants, would be my guess, just because, you know, being able to pass with Foretell mana up or being able to pass with mana up with your spells exiled, I think will make life difficult for your opponent. The more diverse those spells can be, the better, or the more they play with other instants or other things you can do at instant speed, activated abilities, that sort of thing, like mana sinks, that's going to play super well with Foretell. I'm just really excited about figuring out the map of that stuff. And also, I think just that mechanic is going to reward people who do their homework early in the set, you know?
Yes, I agree completely.
So we've got an interesting card here, sort of a Foretell maybe enabler that I wanted to kick off and see your thoughts on here. We've got Karfel Harbinger. I'm calling this Vodalian Arcanist 2.0 ? This is a 1 and a blue for a 1/3, and it says tap to add blue, and you can spend this mana only to Foretell a card from your hand or cast an instant or sorcery spell.
Yeah, this card looks like fire. I would imagine it will be a great pickup in these Foretell decks.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's a lot of the blue cards for Foretell so far look really awesome. First up is Saw It Coming. What does this card do?
This is 1 blue-blue for an instant counter target spell, and then has Foretell for 1 and a blue. So if you don't want to hold up that 3 mana on turn 3, but you got 2 mana floating around at some other point, you can hold your counter spell up for just a 1 and a blue, which I think makes this a little more formidable. It's still not going to be an insanely high pick and limited or anything, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it having Foretell might, just because I think like redundancy of Foretell, especially at instant speed, is going to be really powerful. So maybe just like generically, it won't be a high pick. But if you know you're doing a lot of Foretell stuff, or if you're doing like the like blue, red this time around is like, it's just adding a keyword every time, right? Usually it's instants and sorceries. And now we've got wizards from Zendikar. And now we're tacking on giants as well this time around. So I think maybe it's good with that floating around too.
Yeah, going to have all that synergy. So I guess anything with Foretell is going to get a slight bump for decks that care about Foretelling.
I think so, yeah. I'm very curious to get your thoughts on this. This is the talk of the town, right? Blue gets Swords to Plowshares. Ravenform is here at common. 2 and a blue for a sorcery. Exile target artifact or creature. Its controller creates a 1/1 blue bird creature token with flying, and it has Foretell for just a single blue.
I like this card a lot. Is that okay?
I think that's okay. My guess is this is worse than the community at large thinks it is.
Yes, but I think it's better than we're predisposed to think it is, if that makes sense.
Yes. I think about these effects that we've seen before that create bodies, you know, so we had, I'm forgetting the name of it, but the 5 mana removal spell in white in M21 that exiled the creature and then they got a 1/1. Now, this is better in the sense that it exiles the thing for much, 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 much cheaper, right? 3 mana already is cheaper than 5, but then think about the fact that when you get to like just Foretell this at some point and then you have just 1 mana to exile the thing, that's insane. But a 1/1 flyer is not nothing in limited.
It's not nothing. So I think if you're playing Raven Forms and picking them reasonably highly, you need to make sure that you've got ways to blank 1/1 flyers. But I think blue, white, especially, which seems to be the Foretell color pair, has ways to do that.
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, yeah. I also think that this card potentially has diminishing returns. Like the first one is probably a very high pick, but I don't know how it, like, do you think you want to end up with 4 of these in your deck?
I don't think it's crazy if you're turtling up. There does seem to be a turtle up Foretell deck, you know, gain some life, make the game go long. And I mean, if you're using them wisely on large monsters, uh-huh, it could be beneficial. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, for sure. I think the large monsters thing is also a pretty big key. Like, how much are you downgrading your opponent's creature, right? How much better are their creatures than a 1/1 flyer? And I think that's also going to be a clue to how high of a pick this is and how many copies you'll be happy with in a deck.
Yep. Next up here, we've got Behold the Multiverse. 3 and a blue, instant, scry 2, draw 2 cards, Foretell for 1 and a blue.
This card is wild to me. So already, like, 4 mana, instant, scry 2, draw 2 at common, I think is good. And then the Foretell aspect of this, I think, just bumps it up even more for me.
Yeah, very synergistic card advantage engine. Love it.
We got some combat tricks as well to discuss here. First up is Mammoth Growth, 2 and a green for an instant. Target creature gets +4/+4 until end of turn with Foretell of green. So this is like a great example of, you know, holding up 3 mana for a combat trick is a lot, but holding up 1 mana for +4/+4 is not so much.
But the turn that you're going to have exactly 2 mana left over and not 3 to want to Foretell this to then be able to get it in the exile zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I don't think this is a high pick or anything, but it is like, the potency of all these foretell spells, I think, you know, if we think about how often we talk about drafting with optimism or building your decks with optimism, I'm very optimistic about the foretell mechanic here in terms of, I think one of the things I do the best is maximize my mana each and every turn. And I think foretell is going to reward that in spades.
Yep. Absolutely. Next up, we've got Demon Bolt, which is a pretty sweet one here. This is 2 red for an instant, deals 4 damage to target creature or planeswalker, foretell cost of a single red. This card is nuts.
This is like early front runner for best common in the set, I would guess.
Yeah, I think
so. This is ridiculously good. I mean, 3 mana instant deal 4 is already good, right?
Then you just get some added flexibility and synergy on top of that.
Yeah, really, really good. I mean, it just sort of reminds me of like Royal Eruption was like really good and flexible and synergistic. And that's what this card reads to me too.
Next up here is Augury Raven. This is 3 blue for a 3/3 flyer with foretell of 1 and a blue. I'm very curious about this card. There's a green one also. There seems to be like there's maybe a cycle of 4 drops. I've seen a green, a blue, and a red 4-drop with foretell. All of them are pretty powerful. The green one, for example, is 1 and a green, 3/3. When it ETBs, you draw a card. I kind of want to know where those go because they're very obviously powerful cards, right? Augury Raven is raw power, yeah?
4 mana, 3/3 flyer at common. Phantom Monster, move over, baby.
Yeah, and has the foretell stuff.
Yeah.
Is this going to be good enough that it just goes in every blue deck regardless of synergy, or is this only going to be a very good card in a blue-white foretell deck?
So I think you referencing the 4 mana 3/3 in green that ETBs draws a card is really interesting because remember how like hot and heavy we were for Jiraga Visionary at the start of Zendikar Rising?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm bringing this question up. And it didn't end up being a big player.
So I do wonder how big of a difference 2 toughness versus 3 toughness is. And I think, you know, if Jiraga Visionary were a 3/3, that would have been a big difference, I think, in Zendikar Rising. Who knows how that will fit in here? You know, we don't have an idea of what the like magic number is for toughness, how aggressive the set is, like what the creature sizing is for all the commons and uncommons, etc. We'll get to that next week in the crash course. But yeah, I'm just wondering, like, has limited power creep happened enough where Augury Raven isn't that insane? Because I look at this card and I think it's insane.
Right. That's my initial reaction too. But then when I was going through and laying out the cards that go in each archetype, the only archetype that this really quote unquote belongs in is blue white. Now, it's a great card. You can put it in any blue deck, but is it really going to have a home in those other blue color pairs?
And you say that particularly because it doesn't have relevant types. Like, we haven't talked about that this is also a tribal set on top of everything else yet.
Right. It doesn't have relevant types and it doesn't have synergy anywhere else. Like overt synergy anywhere else, but it is a very good card. So I'm just curious to see how it all fits together.
I agree. Yeah. Augury Raven was a card that I was like, I did sort of like a triple take to it and then like had the Looney Tunes like bugga bugga eyes. But yeah, no, I don't know. We'll see. All right. The next mechanic we're going to talk about here is Boast. So this is a mechanic tacked on to creatures and you get to activate this ability if the creature attacked this turn. And then you can only activate it once each turn.
Yeah, well, I was saved from some severe embarrassment. I posted to Twitter, there's a black 1-drop that's a 1/2, and after it attacks, has boast that you can pay 1 and drain a life from your opponent. And I was under the assumption that you could just fireball your opponent for however much mana you happen to have, and I thought the card was absolutely insane. So once I was corrected on how boast worked, I moved all those cards down in my pick order a little bit.
I think some of the particularly interesting boast cards are the ones where you can curve them into their boast activation. So for example, we've got Fearless Liberator. This is 1 red for a 2/1 dwarf berserker at uncommon, and its boast activation is 2 red, make a 2/1 red dwarf berserker creature token. So a 2 mana 2/1, and then on the next turn you attack with it and you can pay 3 mana to make it 2/1. Now that's pretty powerful. Like, your opponent has to trade off with that, but then you're already getting a 2-for-1 essentially.
Right. So you're essentially turning this into a 3 mana kill your opponent's 2-drop, which is fine, not outstanding.
Right. But that's sort of like, I guess that's the medium case. I mean, the fail case is you draw this late and it's no good, but that's very much the case with a lot of 2-drops. But then the great case is the times when your opponent doesn't have something to do here, right? You just get to make a free 2/1. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's very good. I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that card's good. What else we got going on with Boast?
We've got Usher of the Fallen. This is another super sweet one that you can curve into itself. This is white for a 2/1 spirit warrior, and it has Boast for 1 and a white, create a 1/1 white human warrior creature token. This screams aggression.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would say a sort of lacklustery one, or one that, you know, makes me think of Territorial Hammerskull from Ixalan, and I don't think this is going to perform that way. This is Goldmaw Champion, 2W for a 2/3 Dwarf Warrior at common with Boast, 1W, tap target creature. You having to pay mana here to tap a thing is kind of sad news.
Yeah, I was not crazy in love with this card, even when I thought you could pay 6 to tap down 3 things or whatever. Knowing you can only do it once, I'm not about that card very much.
Yeah, and then we've got a Boast payoff here that's been spoiled.
Yeah, this is Frenzied Raider, 1R for a 2/2, and when you activate a Boast ability, put a +1/+1 counter on Frenzied Raider.
Yeah, I don't quite know what to make of Boast or how to think about Boast. You know, I just wrote an article on like the mechanics of Kaldheim, and I sort of left this out in terms of something to discuss because it seems very, I don't know, what you see is what you get is in my mind here about Boast.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it. Specifically with Frenzied Raider, it's a little awkward in that ideally you want to play this as your 2-drop, but Boast really wants you to be aggressive. But if this is your 2-drop and it doesn't have Boast, you're not going to be boasting until at least turn 4, turning this into a 3/3, which isn't that strong. You know, I'd be way more excited about Frenzied Raider if it had its own Boast ability.
I wonder if the way to think about it is the way we think about go-wide decks as aggressive decks, that like, you know, some aggro decks are like 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop combat trick. And then some aggro decks are like 2-mana spell that makes 2 1/1s, 3-mana spell that makes a 2/2 and a 1/1. Like go wide, go wide, go wide, build out my board, and then Inspired Charge. And I wonder if it's going to be like, set up my board, set up my board, set up my board, attack, dump 6 mana into 3 Boast activations type deal.
Yeah, that could be strong.
Yeah, so I don't know. But Boast is sort of like, I just feels like, okay, this is the aggressive mechanic of the set. How good is it? Again, it's going to be interesting about like mana efficiency. Where are you slotting in? Do you want to affect the board this turn, or do you want to pump your mana into your Boast activations?
Yeah, you describing it as a big swing activating multiple Boast abilities in a turn, that makes it more appealing to me. I hadn't thought of it in quite that light yet.
All right, yeah, well, we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Next mechanic we've got is Snow, baby.
Are you most excited about Snow, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Snow looks fierce to me.
All right, cool. What do we got going on with Snow?
So Snow is, if you played Modern Horizons, there's going to be Snow Basics and Enters the Battlefield tapped Snow Dual Lands, one per pack, taking up the basic land slot. So you're going to be able to draft Snow Lands to put them in your deck, which is pretty sweet. Was a huge part of Modern Horizons, figuring out when you could draft Snow and when not. And power level of Snow looks to be high here. So I would imagine it'll be a similar game in as it was in Modern Horizons, figuring out when you're supposed to draft Snow. So to give you an example here, we've got Sculptor of Winter. This is 1G for a 2/2 Snow Creature Elf Rogue. And that's relevant because there's cards that care about the number of Snow permanents you'll have. Mm-hmm. So it could be Snow Creatures, you know, Snow Lands, Snow Artifacts, whatever, totaling those things up. And this has the activated ability to tap to untap target Snow Land. So we'll ramp you if you have those Snow Basics. 2-mana 2/2 Snow card that is also going to ramp you is very powerful in a Snow deck.
This is an effective reprint of a card we saw in Modern Horizons, right?
Right, Rhyme Tender.
Yeah, Rhyme Tender was untap a Snow permanent, I think, whereas this is just a Snow land.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting implications, but right off the bat, I want to talk about Sculptor Winter's best friend, which is Glittering Frost. We have not seen an effect like this in a little bit, Ben. So this is 2G for a Snow enchantment aura, enchant land. Enchanted land is Snow, and when enchanted land is tapped for mana, its controller adds an additional 1 mana of any color. It's like Snow New Horizons.
It's not quite like Snow New Horizons, right? You only get one of the any color mana.
Yeah, it doesn't double fix. It doesn't add a +1/+1 counter. Like, it doesn't gain you life like Gift of Paradise does, but it does make you an extra Snow permanent, which is kind of cool. I think some decks are going to really care about that.
Right. So Snow in the format is base blue-green, and it also looks like there's Snow stuff in red and black as well. Mm-hmm. And that red-green may even be the base for the multicolor Snow deck. There is a 3-4-5 color Snow deck running around as well. I think that's pretty supported. So we have a Snow Manalith that's pretty sweet. It's called Replicating Ring. It's 3 mana for a Snow artifact, taps to add 1 mana of any color. At the beginning of your upkeep, you put a Knight counter on Replicating Ring. And then if it has 8 or more Knight counters on it, you remove all of them, create 8 colorless Snow artifact tokens named Replicating Ring with tap, add 1 mana of any color.
Well, there's another colorless Snow fixer that we haven't put on the show notes here even. This is like a new Evolving Wilds variant. So this is Valley of Wandering Glow. It's a Snow land. It ETBs tapped. As it enters the battlefield, you choose a color and it taps for the chosen color. And I don't know if this is just a common on its own or if this is part of the like this is going to replace the land in the pack. So this will be one per pack. But either way, this is a really cool like splash land variant.
Yeah, I just saw that this morning. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So both of those are really, really awesome, I think. And I just want to sort of talk about snow in the context of like reasons versus rewards, because I think that's a really great framework for thinking about like moving into the snow deck. But the snow deck in particular, at least if Modern Horizons is an example, was a style of deck because of this idea of you see one snow land per pack, and the snow lands are so important to the like all in on snow style deck. That like oftentimes in Modern Horizons, what you would do is like if you had some weak packs, you would just go, all right, I'm just going to snap up the snow basics here in pack one and hope that if I take all the rewards or role players, really, even, or what I would think the snow lands are in the snow deck, if I take all these role players, then the reasons will be passed to me because no one else can support them.
Right. Yeah. I think that was a very significant and real strategy. And from looking at the snow cards that are in the format, I do think that's going to be a reasonable strategy. There are good, good, good snow payoff cards, and they're spread across enough colors that if you're picking up the snow cards that let you fix, you're going to be able to get the ones that people can't take advantage of.
Right. Yeah. And so it's sort of, it's not quite a game of chicken, but you also want to make sure you notice, like we talked about this a little bit already, but if you want to notice like, oh, it's pack one, pick three, and the snow land is missing, then you're going to be in a bad spot specifically because the person to your right or someone two to your right has that same snap up all the snow land strategy that you might be having for the draft.
Right. It's a very delicate dance because at most a table, if Modern Horizons was any indication, could support two snow drafters. And once you get into three, it starts to get really dicey.
Right. And the dream was, you know, you set yourself up in pack one by snapping up the snow lands, you plant your flag as the snow drafter. And then in packs two and packs three, what you get to do is take the snow permanents out of the packs and then wheel the snow lands because in theory no one else wants them. There's one like big reason that I want to talk about that this card jumps out to me. I'm curious if you think it's as powerful as I do. This is Frost Augur. It's a single blue for a 1/2 snow creature, human wizard at uncommon. And you pay snow, tap, look at the top card of your library. If it's a snow card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand.
I mean, it depends on how nuts your deck is, right? Like the better your snow deck, the better Frost Augur is going to be.
Yeah, I just so like, I'm thinking all the possibilities here. I've got the best case scenario mentality in my head right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if your deck is all snow permanents, Frost Augur's nuts. If you get there on like 2/3 of a snow deck, which is still a powerful snow deck, I think Frost Augur is going to be a little less exciting.
Yeah, I think I would say like if you can get to half your deck, like 20 out of 40 permanents or 20 out of 40 cards or snow cards, like this draws me half a card, I think I'm happy.
Yeah, that's probably a reasonable way to look at it.
It's because it's such a small cost. I mean, you're essentially paying, I don't know, maybe it's like too inconsequential of a body, whatever. This card looks sweet to me.
Yeah, it's a fun card for sure. So speaking of multicolor snow, there is a card that looks specifically seated to support a fun multicolor deck. There's Path to the World Tree. This is one and a green for an enchantment. When it ETBs, search your library for a basic land card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. And these snow lands are basics. So you can search up a snow land with Path to the World Tree. And then you can pay 2 white, blue, black, red, green, sacrifice Path to the World Tree. You gain 2 life, draw 2 cards. Target opponent loses 2 life. Path of the World Tree deals 2 damage to up to 1 target creature, and you create a 2/2 green bear creature token.
That card seems sweet. We're about to talk about sagas, and I'm very curious because this effect is an enchantment, right? Usually we see these sort of like 2 mana, search up a basic, put it in your hand, or whatever, sometimes 3 mana, put it into play. These are just spell effects, but this is one you could like pick up and then replay. Now, that's a lot of do nothing for sure. So there's also a question of how aggressive is the format? How much does it support this sort of do nothing style? But this card does seem pretty sweet for a 5 color deck.
Yep.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And you can rest assured, dear listeners, if there's a 5 color green deck out there, I'll find it for you. Don't you worry. All right. Sagas are up next. And so if you've played Dominaria, if you played Theros Beyond Death, you'll be familiar with the style of card. It's a really, really sweet permanent. They're sort of like mini planeswalker effects, but it's an enchantment. It comes into play. And when it comes into play or at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you put a chapter counter on it or you like accelerate the counters on it. And usually they have 3 chapters. And so you do like first when it comes into play, second on your next turn, third on the following turn. And when the third counter is placed on it, you sacrifice it. So for example, we've got Fall of the Imposter, which is 1 green white. The first and second chapter are the same here. Put a +/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. And the third chapter, exile a creature with the greatest power among creatures target opponent controls. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so some potential weird counter implications there, where if you needed to nab a certain creature, you could put a counter on your opponent's thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I doubt that's going to come up very often. It does seem like it's going to be pump your creature, and then basically, what was that? The black removal from Zendikar Rising?
Soul Shatter?
Yeah.
I am real impressed that I knew that card name.
I'll put in a round of applause sound effect here for you.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I'm super excited about Sagas returning. I think they're really, really great gameplay. Every color pair here not only gets like a signpost on common, but I get a signpost on common Saga and an uncommon spell land. So every color pair is getting three things at uncommon.
Yeah, so I think if you're not doing multicolored snow stuff, my initial inclination is that you want to be a color pair. Although, I don't know, snow bleeds over enough that maybe snow is just going to be multicolored and the other decks are going to be straight two color things. But regardless, you are heavily incentivized to find an open lane where nobody else is drafting your color pair to reap all those benefits.
Yeah. Before we dive into each color pair, because I think, you know, talking about the sagas is going to really help us get a sense of what these color pairs are trying to do, and obviously talking about their signpost on commons, but just a couple things if you haven't played with sagas before, or some things to keep in mind with sagas. The biggest thing is that you can rebuy them. You know, you get to have the third chapter go on the stack before you have to sacrifice it. And so you have this window of being able to, you know, blink that saga or bounce that saga back to your hand to replay it. Now, the other interesting thing about sagas in this set in particular is oftentimes what we see is the sagas building up, right? It's like chapter one is low impact, chapter two, medium impact, chapter three, big impact. A lot of the times here, the biggest impactful thing happens in chapter one. It's like big thing, medium thing, small thing, or whatever, or big thing, synergistic thing, whatever. Like it's a different spin on the sagas. So you have a bigger window of being able to blink these or pick them back up if you want to.
To get that maximum effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Usually it was like, well, if chapter three is the big effect, I have to time it just right where chapter three goes on the stack and then I cast Blink of an Eye to return it to my hand. So I get the effect and then get to play the saga again. But then the additional implication of that was that then you're replaying the saga and then you're having to wait a couple more turns before that impactful thing happens again. And again, I think that's going to be different here, because if the most impactful thing is the first chapter, then you just immediately get that when you replay it.
Yeah, sweet. All right, so you ready to dive into the color pairs?
Very much so. What's going on first?
All right, first up, we've got Arachdos. This is one of the least, I think, defined color pairs, unfortunately, so far. I mean, that could change with new cards that are spoiled, but it was difficult to get a sense from the uncommon signpost and the saga as to exactly what it was trying to do. So our uncommon here is Carter Doomscourge. This is 2BR for a 4/3 legendary demon berserker. And when it enters the battlefield, until your next turn, creatures your opponents control attack each combat if able, and attack a player other than you if able. And then whenever an attacking creature dies, each opponent loses one life and you gain one life.
This seems wild for an uncommon to me. Like, I would not be surprised if this were a rare.
Right. It's a lot of text. And it's interesting as far as what it incentivizes. Just seeing it in the light of, I think black-red is a color pair that's got a fair amount of boast and cares about boasting. You know, thinking about boast in the lens of building up your board and then swinging in a big turn makes this make a little more sense to me. So maybe you're building it up, you know, your opponents are attacking into you, maybe you're eating a creature, and then you're swinging back really hard on the crackback after all your opponents have attacked.
Right, clears the way for you to be able to do 2, maybe 3 boast activations if you have the ability to do so.
Right, it essentially forces your opponent into a race when they might not want to.
Yeah, which is really, really powerful. And if black-red can support it, which I imagine it can, this is going to be a sweet card. The Rakdos Saga is Cardor's Vicious Return. This is 2BR. First chapter, you can sacrifice a creature. When you do, it deals 3 damage to any target. Chapter 2, each player discards a card. And then chapter 3, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Put a +1/+1 counter on it, and it gains haste until your next turn.
That is raw power there, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, that is just a planeswalker. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, both very powerful, but not super synergistic like we're going to see from some of the other color pairs.
Yeah, I am hoping, and I don't think we've seen the tools for this yet, I'm hoping black-red's got a little steel and sack deck going on here.
That does not seem to be the case to me much from what I saw on the spoiler, but could be cards missing.
Next up, we've got Boros. So Boros cares about dwarves, equipment, and enchantments. So the signpost on common is Cole the Forge Master. This is one of the first cards spoiled for this set. It's red-white for a 2/2 legendary creature, Dwarf Warrior. Whenever another non-token creature you control dies, if it was enchanted or equipped, you return it to its owner's hand. And creature tokens you control that are enchanted or equipped get +1/+1. This is weird to me. What is this, like, both caring about tokens? Like, are there tokens floating around?
Yeah, there's definitely tokens floating around. Green white really wants to go wide.
Well, I guess the two Boros Boast cards we talked about that, like, curve into itself with the Boast activation, they make tokens, so that's a thing.
Right, and there's also the cycle of equipment where you can pay the casting cost where they come into play to make a token that the equipment is pre-attached to.
Right, I think of those as like kicker equipment, sort of.
Yeah, I missed the word tokens on this, though, on my first read. That's interesting.
Yeah, so I don't quite know. This is seeming to me like it'll be more of a reward for being red-white rather than a reason to be red-white, and that's often, feels like that's often the case with the red-white uncommon, because the red-white deck is aggressive, and so it's like often supported at common, and so you could take or leave this. Like Kargan War Leader, I think, was a great example of that. It's like, if you're a warrior deck, yeah, you'll be fine with that. Does your warrior deck make or break on the fact you have a war leader? Never.
Right, right, right. So moving on to the saga, we've got Forging the Tyrite Sword, one red-white. First two chapters let you create a treasure token. Not the most exciting thing on the planet for a red-white deck. And then chapter 3, search your library for a card named Halvar, God of Battle, or an equipment card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library.
So, okay, so if you get one of those like kicker equipments that make a token, or you can pay extra to make a token to auto-attach it to, and this gives you two tokens to like have extra mana for that quote-unquote kicker cost, that's kind of cool.
Right. And if you're lucky enough to get Halvar, God of Battle, which is a white mythic god, you can go search up your bomb.
Yeah, okay. So some narrow implications here, but neither of these are super exciting in my mind.
I agree.
Next up, we've got Selesnya. What's going on there?
Selesnya really wants to go wide, cares a lot about tokens and humans, might be a little bleed over into elves tokens as well from green, but definitely wants to set up a big board and pump it. So the signpost uncommon here is Maja Bredegarde Protector, or Maja, maybe. I don't know. He's probably not Spanish, so let's go with Maja.
I told you, last week I turned in my papers. I am no longer the pronunciation expert.
All right, we've got two green, white, white for a 2/3 human warrior. Other creatures you control get +1/+1. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 white human warrior creature token.
It's basically Tristani, right?
I mean, it's very good, and it very clearly tells you what green, white wants to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest knock against this is 5 mana for a 2/3 body. And I think this may have the effect where this isn't actually a turn 5 play, it's a turn 6 play. So you get to go 5 drop, play a land, and then get that 1/1. So you're then getting a 2/3 and a 2/2 for the mana.
I mean, curving out and using this as your anthem for the turn, I mean, you'd be willing to pay that much for an anthem plus a body. I mean, 2/3 ++1/+1 to your team is absurd.
Well, it's just fragile. That's the only thing I'm thinking. Like, if that's your game plan, you would rather this was an enchantment.
Yes, I agree.
So I just think there's something to think about there. But yeah, it's definitely a powerful card. And then we already talked about the Fall of the Imposter. That was the saga we read initially. So moving on to Golgari, Elves and Snow, baby. Signpost uncommon is Herald, King of Skemphar, one black green for a 3/2 with menace. And when it enters the battlefield, you look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal an elf, warrior, or Tyvar card from among them and put it into your hand, put the rest on the bottom in a random order.
Yeah, so Tyvar is the green mythic planeswalker, if you're wondering about that.
Ooh, nice. So if you're so lucky, you get that and this. That's pretty sweet.
Right, so I'm never going to be doing that.
Oh, of course not. Well, you are, you're never lucky. You never open planeswalkers.
That's right. So yeah, this is sweet, and black-green looks super supported as far as elves. It's weird, you know, diving into the color pairs. Some of the color pairs are really, really tribal. Like, black-green is very elf tribal. Blue-red is very giant tribal. And then something like black-red, you know, was not nearly tribal as those two color pairs.
Yeah, I think the enemy color pairs seem much more supported in terms of a tribal thing, right? So the red-white dwarves thing, this black-green elves thing, and then I think the allied color pairs less so.
Okay, interesting. So moving on to the saga for black-green, we've got Binding of the Old Gods. This is 2 black-green for a saga. Chapter 1, destroy target non-land permanent and opponent controls. Busted.
Yeah.
Chapter 2, search your library for a forest card, put it on the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So worth noting that forest you go get could be a snow basic, because there's definitely some snow overlap here, I think, in the Sultai region. And chapter 3, creatures you control gain death touch until end of turn, which is going to be pretty nasty if you have a wide board of elves. it's going to be very difficult to block.
Well, the other thing that you get to do with that second chapter is search up a duel, because the snow duels are both land types.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
That's so good.
This is an example of one of those, like, first chapter is the most impactful, second chapter medium impactful, third chapter sort of insignificant. I don't know. Like, creatures gaining death touch does enable attacks for you for sure, but who knows if you'll be able to do that with whatever the given board state is. But this is just like everything I want to do in a game of Magic, Ben. I want to ramp. I want to blow things up. I want to turtle up a little bit. Maybe I can pick this up and do it again. Like, holy cow, this card's good.
Yeah, very powerful. Next up, we've got Is It, which cares about giants and spells. So first up here, we've got Agar the Freezing Flame. This is one blue red for a 3/3 legendary giant wizard. And whenever a creature or planeswalker an opponent controls is dealt excess damage, if a giant, wizard, or spell you control dealt damage to it this turn, draw a card.
That is wild. So basically, like, if you have a spell that's like deal 3 to a 2 toughness creature, you draw a card now?
Yeah. Or if your 4/4 giant runs over a 3/3, your opponent's chump blocking and already in a bad spot, you just totally crush their soul.
Oh my god, that's crazy. The saga here for Is It is Invasion of the Giants. This is blue-red. First chapter is Scry 2. Second chapter, draw a card. Then you may reveal a giant card from your hand. When you do, Invasion of the Giants deals 2 damage to target opponent or planeswalker. And chapter 3, the next giant spell you cast this turn costs 2 less to cast. This does not seem great to me.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the less impactful gold sagas, I think.
Yeah, so I'd be curious to see. You know, it sort of reminds me-ish of Metamize Prophecy, but I think Prophecy being able to eventually draw you 2 cards, or having the potential to draw you 2 cards, I think gets ahead of Invasion of the Giants.
Yeah. There's also a very sweet removal spell that's going to play very nicely with the gold uncommon. There's Squash. This is 4 and a red for an instant. Costs 3 less to cast if you control a giant. So you get to cast it for 1 and a red if you have a giant. Instant speed, deals 6 damage to target creature or planeswalker.
Whoa.
Yeah. Going to be huge in blue-red giants. Pun not intended.
But like, blue-red giants is also wizards, right? Like, maybe there aren't like lone wizards floating around. I will just be curious to see, because there's so much going on, and perhaps because we're coming off of such a tribal centric set of Zendikar Rising, I am curious how tribal will fare among all of the business that's happening in Kaldheim.
I mean, I think Is It is very giants, Golgari is very elves, and those are the only two dwarves, less so I think than elves and giants, but dwarves a little bit in Boros as well.
Okay. Next up in Dimir, we have Narfi, Betrayer King. This is 3 blue black for a 4/3 legendary snow creature zombie wizard. Other snow and zombie creatures you control get +1/+1. Wow. And then it has an activation of 3 snow. Return Narfi, Betrayer King from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. What?
Yeah. Card's nuts.
Oh my god.
Now you're seeing why I'm excited about snow.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and this is a card that makes me go, yeah, I'll jam 2 snow planes in my deck to try and activate this. Like, my goodness.
Well, or just imagine your base blue-green snow. You get to splash this off of the Replicating Ring and the Enchant Land. It's going to be very high pick.
That is really strong. Okay, what's the saga?
Saga is the Trickster God's Heist. This is 2 blue-black, and first chapter is you may exchange control of 2 target creatures. Chapter 2, you may exchange control of 2 target non-basic, non-creature permanents that share a card type.
Okay, so like, I can swap my treasure for your snow ring. I can swap this saga for your saga.
Right, and doing that with 2. Why is it 2? Oh, because you're swapping one of each. Okay, I thought you could do this.
That's how an exchange works. Never mind. Yeah, you need 2 things to exchange.
Yeah, okay, I got it. And chapter 3, target player loses 3 life and you gain 3 life.
So again, we have most impactful, medium impactful, somewhat impactful, right? Like, the biggest thing is happening here at chapter 1. And it's a hard thing to set up, right? You're going to need to have some stuff that you're willing to throw away, maybe like a card that enters the battlefield and does something. You know, there's a sort of Burglar Rats variant in the format, like a 2 mana black creature enters the battlefield, an opponent discards a card, and then you've got this like meaningless body floating around that you're happy to exchange. So, you know, when you think about stuff like Switcheroo or whatever, you need to set that up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely agree. It's going to be hard to really maximize, but high ceiling on the card.
Yeah, for sure.
And then Dimir really does care about zombies as well. So blue-black's kind of the zombies thing. I think they're called Draugr in Kaldheim.
Okay, nice. Good for you. Look at that. Doing your research. Love to see it.
I know.
Moving on to Orzhov. This is sweet. So we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but Orzhov is all about like double spelling. It cares about when you cast your second spell each turn. So the signpost uncommon is Fyrja, Judge of Valor. It's 2WB for a 2/4 flying lifelink. That's already pretty darn good. And it says, whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. This is so important for this strategy.
Right, because one of the things you're going to do if you're double spelling frequently is run out of cards.
Yeah.
And Fyrja keeps the gas flowing.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the things you're going to be looking out for. So we'll talk about that mechanic in just a little bit.
Next up, we have Ascent of the Worthy. This is 1WB for the Orzhov Saga. First and second chapters are the same. Choose a creature you control. Until your next turn, all damage that will be dealt to creatures you control is dealt to that creature instead. So you're offering up your sacrificial lamb that is worthy. And then in chapter 3, it makes this Ascent. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield with a flying counter on it. That creature is an angel warrior in addition to its other types.
Yeah, I'm not that excited about this. Should I be?
Seems fine.
Yeah, I'd say it seems fine. Well, especially if I'm thinking about white-black being the double spell thing, I think that means a lot of its creatures are going to be small.
Well, but I think it also is angels. I think there are two sort of different white-black decks. I mean, there definitely is an angel tribal deck that does not care about double spelling as much. If you're looking at this as a 3-mana raise dead, like with a +1 or with a flying counter, that's not nothing.
It's close to nothing. It's 3-mana raise dead with suspend 2 also.
Yeah, but it comes back with a flying counter straight to the battlefield. I mean, that's a good rate on that type of effect.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, maybe you're on the back foot. This lets you play defense. I mean, it could buy you multiple turns. I don't know. It does some things.
That's true. Yeah. Moving on to Azorius, we've got Vega the Watcher, 1WB for a 2/2 legendary creature bird spirit with flying. Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, draw a card. Foretell, baby.
Yeah, foretell early and often. So again, this is like the allied color pair wants to foretell, but again, not a super tribal heavy thing. So this is definitely the best home for Augury Raven, like we talked about earlier.
Yes.
The Phantom Monster Flyer with foretell, 1W. All right, the saga is Nico Defies Destiny. This is 1WB. First chapter, you gain 2 life for each foretold card you own in exile. So derping around, foretell those things, gain some life while you're dying. Second chapter, add 2WB, spend this mana only to foretell cards or cast spells that have foretell. And chapter 3, return target card with foretell from your graveyard to your hand.
This seems wildly dirtily.
It is wildly dirtily, but it's also wildly powerful.
Yeah, I do like, you know, this has like Dovin's Acuity light to it a little bit to me. Like, I just don't know how much you can afford to, like, what's the most life you can gain? 4? Like, you can't just be like, exile a spell, exile a spell, exile a spell, play this, gain 6 life. Like, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think 4 seems like a reasonable amount to be hoping to gain.
Yeah. All right, what's going on with Simic?
Simic is snow and also has changelings going on. Green is where most of the changelings in the format are concentrated. So changelings, I don't know that we talked about this, but they're every creature type at the same time.
Right.
Any creature that has changeling. So the signpost uncommon here is Morrit of the Frost, 2GB, 2BB for a 0/0 legendary snow creature shapeshifter. It has changeling. And you may have Morrit of the Frost enter the battlefield as a copy of a permanent you control, except it's legendary and snow in addition to its other types. And if it's a creature, it enters with 2 additional +1/+1 counters on it and has changeling. So it can copy any permanent. If it does copy a creature, gets those 2+1/+1 counters and makes it a changeling.
Yeah. The fact that it's only permanents you control for 5 mana makes me a little sad, but the 2 additional counters does make up for that for sure. And we actually don't have the saga yet at uncommon for Simic, so we'll have to wait and see what that is.
Next up, moving on to Gruul. What do we have going on there?
The signpost uncommon here is Svella Ice Shaper, 1RG for a 2/4 legendary snow creature troll warrior. 3-mana tap, create a colorless snow artifact token named Icy Manolith. With tap, add 1 mana of any color, so it makes mana rocks. And you can pay 6RG to tap it. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may cast a spell from among them without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Whoa, is this the first time like red-green isn't aggro?
I know, that's what I was wondering. It looks like red-green might be the base for the multicolored snow deck.
Like red-green is the ramp? rather than blue-green.
But there's also some snow beatdown cards in red-green as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it all ends up coming together.
Okay, cool. Well, does the saga point in one of those directions?
So the saga is Arnie Slays the Trolls. This is red-green. First chapter, target creature you control fights up to one target creature you don't control. Two is add a red, put +1/+1 counters on up to one target creature you control. And then chapter three, you gain life equal to the greatest power among creatures you control.
Okay, so a medium fight spell with then potential upside?
Right, yeah. So that's definitely more pointing towards the beatdown side of things. Like I said, there's some tension there, but I think it'll be interesting to see how all of that ends up combining together.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so you alluded to this a little bit earlier, and we've already talked about how the enemy color pairs are tribal, but there's like tribal stuff everywhere, really. But there's changelings as well, right? These creatures are every type. Like everyone gets a pack beast type of deal.
Yeah. So for example, there's Lijara Kinseekers. This is 3 and a blue for a 2/4 shapeshifter, has changeling, and when it enters the battlefield, if you control 3 or more creatures that share a creature type, put +1/+1 counter on Lijara Kinseekers, then scry one.
4 mana for a 3/5 scry one is pretty big.
Yeah, I think, and again, they're mostly green, some floating around in blue as well.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about, right, there's blue-red giants, green-black elves, red-white dwarves, black-white angels, red-black berserkers, blue-black zombies, green-white has humans, and then green, but looks like also blue, has changelings.
Right, and then some of the color pairs just, I mean, red-green is maybe trolls and stuff, but some of the color pairs are just like overtly get a lot of creatures of this type and you will get rewarded, and some of them are way less so.
Yeah.
There's a really cool tribal payoff in Basalt Ravager that could be really powerful and limited. 3 and a red for a 4/2 giant wizard. And when it enters the battlefield, it deals X damage to any target, where X is the greatest number of creatures you control that have a creature type in common. So going to slot easiest into, you know, red, blue giants. But, you know, if you've got this in red, green, and you've got a lot of changelings running around, could also be great there.
Yeah, it's like reverse Thundering Spark Mage.
Yeah.
Next up, we want to take a look at Black-White Double Spell, which I have named aka the Ben Wernie here.
Yeah, I think there's two different versions of Black-White. I think there is this Black-White Double Spell deck, and then there's also a Black-White Angel Tribal, and we'll see which one is ultimately better or if they end up blending together. So there's a lot of cards that let you double spell or incentivize you to double spell. So it looks very much like a low to the ground aggressive deck.
Mm-hmm.
So first card up here is Infernal Pet. This is 2 black for a 2/2 imp. When you cast your second spell each turn, put +1/+1 counter on Infernal Pet, and it gains flying until end of turn.
Yeah, we've also got Clarion Spirit, 1 and a white for a 2/2. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you make a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying.
That card just looks like it's going to be a house in every single white deck.
Right, yeah, maybe just like every white deck is snapping that up no matter what.
There's also Blood Sky Berserker. This is 1 and a black for a 1/1. When you cast your second spell each turn, put +1/+1 counters on Blood Sky Berserker. It gains menace until end of turn.
Yeah, this deck just looks like it has very clear payoff slash enablers. And so the enablers are going to be cantrips. You know, we've got Revitalize and Village Rites as reprints. So Revitalize, 1 and a white, gain 3 life, draw a card. Village Rites, single black, sack a creature, draw 2 cards. Because the important thing, as we talked about earlier, is to keep the gas flowing here, right? You're going to need to have more spells, because if you're double spelling a lot, you're going to run out of cards to play pretty quickly. So you need like those cheap cantrips to be able to go, here's something that impacts the board, and here's something that's going to, you know, be my second spell, but also draw me a card. And I just think that this deck looks like really streamlined. And I don't know if that means it's going to be very obvious and everyone's going to try and draft it early, but this is a deck I have my eye on early to draft because I like really see how it comes together.
Yeah, it looks fun. And the black white gold uncommon is definitely a nice bridge between this deck and the tribal angel side of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a pretty sweet artifact that slots in nicely. This is Scorn Effigy. 3 mana for a 2/3 scarecrow and has a foretell cost of 0.
Is this card good?
I don't know. I don't think so, but it is cool. It appeals to my sensibilities for some reason.
Yeah. So foretell, I think, is the other obvious piece of this black-white double spell puzzle, because like, well, you get to have your stuff be cheaper. So you take a turn off to foretell something, and then your next turn, you get to be able to double spell with an impactful thing at a huge cost reduction. And that is true, but I don't think that's the primary thing that's going to enable the deck. in my mind.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. All right, next up we've got spell lands. So we've talked about this a little bit, but every uncommon color pair gets a spell land that has activations of both colors of mana from that color pair. So this reminds me a lot of the memorials from Dominaria. And so maybe this is a clue that the format could potentially be a little slower, you know, going to incentivize you to run 18 lands in your decks, that sort of thing.
Right. So for example, we've got Gates of Istvel. This is an uncommon land. It ETBs tapped. It taps for white. And then you can pay 2 white, double blue, tap, sack it to gain 2 life and draw 2 cards. So these all are pretty largely impactful things to get from a land, right? This is gain 2 life, draw 2 cards is pretty big. You know, some of them make large creatures, some of them like kill a thing, gain you some life, whatever. Like these are impactful things, but they're very expensive, right? This has an activation of 5, but also requires this. So it's really a 6 mana effect. So the question is like, one, you know, how good is your deck in terms of being able to cast this or to activate it in terms of like, are you solidly white blue? And then the other thing is, can you afford a tap land? And the other thing is the game going to go long enough where you want to sack your land on turn 6?
I just want to be the 5-color deck that just plays all of these that people don't pick.
That's like, really cool. Yeah, that is a pretty big payoff for that deck because you want to draft lands as well. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's cool.
All right, we've also got some kicker equipment. We've alluded to this earlier. So these are equipment that enter the battlefield and allow you to make a token by paying a certain amount. So first up, we've got Dwarven Hammer. This is 2 and a red for an artifact equipment. When it enters the battlefield, you can pay 2. If you do, create a 2/1 red dwarf berserker creature token, then attach Dwarven Hammer to it. An equipped creature gets +3/+0 and has trample. So if you pay, essentially pay 5, you get a 5/1 trampler when you play this equipment.
Yeah, that then dies into an equipment. That's not bad. Like +3/+0 and trample, equip 3 is a lot, but that is a lot of power that can't be chumped.
Right. And it's cool that these exist for the red white equipment deck, right?
Yeah.
It certainly helps give that deck more legs because one of the drawbacks of red white when it cares about equipment is you have to play all this junky equipment, but now you get cards that are creatures and equipment.
Yeah. The other one in red white is Valkyrie's Sword, 1 and a white for an equipment. Equipped creature gets +2/+1 and has an equip cost of 3. But when it enters the battlefield, you can pay 4 and a white to make a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying and vigilance and attach it to it. So that's a lot of mana. That's 7 mana, but for a 6/5 flying vigilance.
That is large and in charge.
Large and in charge. Yeah. The one that I am most dreading, and I'm sure you are too, is Giant's Amulet.
Oh yeah. This is blue for an artifact equipment. When it enters the battlefield, you can pay 3 and a blue. If you do, create a 4/4 blue giant wizard creature token, then attach Giant's Amulet to it. Equip creature gets +0/+1 and has this creature has hexproof as long as it's untapped. Equip cost of 2. So the saving grace is at least this card can't go on offense without being exposed.
Right, because that's what you're always worried about is people's like whatever, what was that snapping turtle, the 4/5 hexproof from Dominaria?
I mean, it ultimately did end up winning the game.
Because you would put an aura on it.
Right, and then you had to attack. So when the thing does try to kill you, you will have a window of opportunity.
I guess that's true. But then you can just move this. That's the sick thing. Is like, so you whatever, then you just move this to some other creature to be on defense. But I see what you're saying. Like, you can still mess with it. God forbid something has vigilance. Like, I don't know. This card, why? Why put Hexproof Unlimited? I don't get it.
I agree. So next up, we've got our first disagreement. This is what happened before the podcast. So header here is Smuggler's Copter is back in our show notes. My question to you, Ethan, is it?
I mean, no, obviously I'm being hyperbolic, but we do have Funeral Longboat at common, which is a 2-mana 3/3 vehicle with Vigilance and Crew 1. So the Smuggler Copter analog here is a 2-mana 3/3 vehicle with Crew 1. So this has vigilance. This doesn't have the like flying, and when it attacks or blocks, you loot. So that's, you know, obviously Copter was busted. This is not that. But I think this is very powerful. If Copter taught me anything, it's that a 2-mana 3/3 vehicle with Crew 1 is really, really good.
So to give listeners a sneak peek behind the scenes, Ethan and I usually work on the show notes separately. Like one of us starts it. Most of the time it's Ethan, and then I add stuff towards the end of the week, and then we record. So our show notes went Smuggler's Copter's back. I wrote in the show notes, this seems kind of mediocre to me, ? And then Ethan responded, oh, wow, I think this is going to be a top 10 common. And then we immediately started duking it out before we started recording.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm obviously not going to convince you of anything. And I've already laid out why. I just think like the raw stats here and the fact that it's colorless, I think this is going to be a really high pick.
Yeah, and I could certainly see it playing out that way. It did not strike me that way. I think this is fine, but it's not particularly synergistic. I could see it being a card you want in an aggressive deck, but ultimately, I just don't know that it is going to be a card that makes your deck that much better. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not helping other cards around it at all or anything like that.
Well, not in a very like explicit way, but I think, you know, if you've got small bodies or whatever, it definitely, if you're an aggressive deck, you're interested in this card, I think, because, you know, if I know it's not evasive, but it's kind of big for the rate. Maybe it not being evasive is a huge knock against it and it just gets blanked too easily, but I definitely have my eye on this card.
It seems hard. I could see either one of us being right. It seems hard to evaluate without the context of the format.
Sure, I think that's right. Well, speaking of hard to evaluate without the context of the format, let's round things out with another edition of Great or Garbage, Ben. The first card here I want to talk about is Divine Gambit. White for a sorcery at uncommon. Exile target artifact, creature, or enchantment an opponent controls. That player may put a permanent card from their hand onto the battlefield.
I saw this card and immediately I was trying to think of ways to make it work. I don't know what that says about me, but I really want this card to be great. My gut says it's probably not, but in limited, it certainly has more of a chance than in constructed.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's so hard because... so. Obviously, the thing you have to adjust is this doesn't cost white, right? This is essentially like a turn 7 play, right? You're playing this on your opponent's, like, hopefully their final threat, their largest threat, when they have one or two cards in hand, and then you fingers cross that they don't have another one waiting in the wings, you know?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say great, like closer to great than garbage on the sliding scale, because it's also going to let you double spell, and white seems to care about that to a certain extent. Like, this only being 2 mana is real, and if you wait until they only have one or two cards, now, can you afford to do that? That's another thing.
Right, that's the other thing, right? What happens when it's turn 4 and you're like, dang it, I have to kill this one thing, but I know that means they just get to play their 6-drop.
I don't know. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I want to like it, but I'm going to go on the side of garbage.
All right, next up, we've got Wither Crown. This is 1 black enchantment aura enchant creature. This was Voxie's preview card.
Mm-hmm.
Enchanted creature has base power 0 and has, at the beginning of your upkeep, you will lose 1 life unless you sacrifice this creature.
So we haven't talked about Bound in Gold, which is we'll talk about this a little bit, but maybe we'll talk about them simultaneously here, right? This is the pacifism effect. 2 and a white, enchant permanent, can't attack or block, can't crew vehicles, and can't activate its abilities unless they're mana abilities. So I think we got to talk about the enchantment-based removal right now. We've got Bound in Gold here, and we've got Wither Crown. And I don't know why, but I look at Bound in Gold, and I'm like, this card is bad, or I want to like find reasons for this card to be bad. And I look at Wither Crown, and I'm like, oh, that looks kind of good. And I don't know why.
That is some serious cognitive dissonance there.
Well, but I'm aware of it, at least.
I guess that's good.
Yeah, so I think like Wither Crown reminds me a little bit of Inevitable End from Theros Beyond Death. You know, the like 2 and a black aura. At the beginning of your upkeep, you had to like sack a creature. So the thing about that card was it more often than not just got the thing dead. Now, this is a little different because like paying 1 life, at a certain point, may not be that bad. You may say like, hey, I want to have a like 0 power, you know, X toughness creature around for a little bit. The other thing is that +1/+1 counters exist in the format. And so just because the thing has base power doesn't mean it won't have power with counters on.
Right. I'm going firm on garbage for Wither Crown.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's true. I think it looks not great. Like, do you think maybe sometimes you'll play one, like it's a necessary evil type deal?
Well, I think it's playable for sure, but it is not a high pick in my mind.
Yeah. So like you're saying like C-, whatever, role player, maybe even replaceable.
I think replaceable.
Yeah. Okay. And what about Bound in Gold?
I'm going great on Bound in Gold.
You think that's going to crack your top 3 commons this time around, probably?
I think it is. Yeah. It looks good.
I'm going to try and not. That's the thing I'm trying to lean on, is not have it be my top commons. But there's going to be a lot more information that we'll need in the coming few days once the full spoiler is revealed to us here to know where this sits in the set, I think. Next up is Dogged Pursuit. My goodness, Ben, everyone's talking about this card. 3 and a black enchantment. At the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. It's Ill-Gotten Inheritance, right?
No, it is not Ill-Gotten Inheritance.
Why is it not Ill-Gotten Inheritance?
Because it doesn't have the activated ability. There's no spectacle in the format. Like, the decks don't care about doing this. There's large monsters running around. This card's not good.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I do think there will be a home for this, is my guess. And I just don't know where it's gonna be. Like, I am interested for this card to have some way to shine, because I think it's not gonna be actual factual unplayable, though maybe it will be, but I just would like to see, like, maybe there's some like hard control deck that just needs a way to win. And that's what this is. Like, you have a control deck at common and this is a way to win. But generally with Ill-Gotten Inheritance, it was best in an aggro deck.
Right. Yeah. I think this is significantly worse than Ill-Gotten Inheritance already in the context of the format that we can see. Mm-hmm. I agree. Maybe it'll find a home, but it's not going to be first pickable like Ill-Gotten Inheritance was.
No, not at all.
All right. Next up, we've got Taunt the Trolls. This is 3 and a red instant. Taunt the Trolls deals 3 damage to any target. If a creature is dealt damage this way, it gets +5/+0 until end of turn.
I think this card is insanely good.
Really? Talk to me about that.
This is a split card of 4 mana, deal 3, which isn't great, but it's an instant speed. So that's still fine. 4 mana, deal 3 to a 3 toughness or smaller creature. So you're trading down on mana almost certainly. But it also has the split ability of target, like, you just win the game. Your unblocked 4 toughness creature now is a lava axe as well.
Yeah.
This card is very good, I think.
I am a little less hot on it than that. I think it's good. I don't know if I would go great. I'm like firmly medium on it.
Why? You don't like split cards? You don't like winning the game?
I mean, I like all of those things. It's a lot of mana to do that, though.
Yeah. I think I'm going firm great here on Taunt the Trolls.
All right.
Next up is Axeguard Cavalry. 1 and a red for a 2/2 Dwarf Berserker at common, and it has tap, target creature gains haste until end of turn. Is this better on a 2/2 or worse on a 2/2?
Than on a 1 mana 1/1, you're saying?
Yeah.
I think it's better.
I think it might be worse. Like, that, my initial thought was it's better because the 2 mana 2/2 body is more relevant, but that makes me want to activate this a lot less.
Yeah, but it's still threat of activation later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think this card's very good. I'm going on great for Axeguard Cavalry.
Yeah, I don't think it's garbage, but I don't think it's great. I think it's just fine.
That's not an option. We got to have greater garbage.
You did that on Taunt the Trolls. We each get one good.
Calvin rules here as we're midway through the game.
That's right. Calvin Ball rules. Next up is Masked Vandal. 1 and a green for a 1/3 shapeshifter. So it's a changeling, right? Every creature type. And when it enters the battlefield, you may exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, exile target artifact or enchantment an opponent controls.
That's pretty darn good.
That's a 2 mana 1/3 with relevant types at common that just randomly gives you a naturalize effect main deck. That's great.
How many of them are you going to run though, right? Are you going to run 3 Masked Vandals? Like, it's going to be a 1 or a 2 of maybe.
But that's still like really powerful. But then you're also happy to have more to bring in from the sideboard.
Right. I think situationally great is what I would give that card.
Yeah, that's fair.
Next up, we've got Frostpyre Arcanist. This is 4 and a blue, 2/5. Costs 1 less to cast if you control a giant or a wizard. And whenever it enters the battlefield, search your library for an instant or sorcery card with the same name as a card in your graveyard. Reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. This is an interesting card. So
yeah.
Assuming you get multiple copies of good removal spells, this card's very good. So sort of like the rich get richer in a certain sense.
Yeah, it reminds me very much of Chrome Replicator from M21, right? That was the 5 mana 4/4. When it enters the battlefield, if you control 2 or more non-land, non-token permanents with the same name, you got another 4/4. And I think this is very similar to that, right? If you think about having two spells in your graveyard or whatever, that's at you. You have cast 2 spells. Chroma Replicator cared about you having cast 2 creatures of the same name. That was essentially how you got that copy. So it felt like eventually Chrome Replicator was like a reward for having done that, or like a speculation on, hey, I know I'm going to want to pick up multiple copies of spell X or whatever. But like, and obviously just a Wishcoin Crab, if you assume the cost reduction exists here, that's just a fine card, like a 4 mana 2/5 with relevant types. Yeah, it's an interesting card for sure.
I mean, if you have multiple copies of Squash, because that's going to be the most obvious card to get multiple copies of in blue-red, that would be sick. I'm a little leery. It's a lot to come together. You know, Chrome Replicator was hard to make work.
That's what I think.
Certainly high upside.
Yeah, I wonder, I think a lot of, like, if we're going to see a churn spell, like a Thrill of Possibility or Tormenting Voice style thing, I think that makes this card better. Like, how much velocity do you get to go through your library, I think makes this card better.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, all right, Ben, that's all we got for now.
That was it? There's no more?
No more, just churning through those commons and uncommons that we've seen so far. I'm excited to see the rest of the set come together in a few days.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of the cards already. So it's. I think the set is shaping up and I like what I see.
Yeah, I think the final thing I want to leave our listeners with here is sort of talking about synergy overall. You know, coming off of Zendikar Rising, that was a big, you know, we talk about it as like a macro synergy set. Like it was very much about like your color pair was doing this tribal thing or you were doing this party thing. And there wasn't a lot of like, ooh, this small interaction versus if you play at any of Kaladesh Remastered, Kaladesh Remastered was like the other end of the spectrum of, well, there's all these tiny things like, yeah, you're doing energy, but then you also have some servo stuff and you've got some +1+1 counter stuff and all that overlap was nice. And I think overlap is the name of the game here in Kaldheim.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. I am a little worried that like black, green elves and, you know, red, blue giants and black, white angels, that those tribal synergies that are overt plus all the snow stuff is just really powerful. And that boast and the non-snow, non-linear tribal stuff is just not going to be able to compete with that. That's a fear that I have for the format, but I'm interested to see how it all plays out.
I think, yeah, speed will be an interesting indicator of that. Like the faster the format, the more linear the stuff is. And I think also just like how supported I think the multicolor good stuff is slash snow.
Yeah. All right. Great place to wrap things up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thanks so much to ChannelFireball.com for sponsoring the podcast. If you're heading over to CFB for any and all Magic purchases, signing up for CFB Pro, please use the code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out streaming. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. We're both under those same usernames on Twitter, and you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for the crash course of Kaldheim.
Thanks, everybody. See you later. Chapter 2, search your library for a forest card, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your snow.
Just shuffle your snow right into your library.
I was just thinking about how I was going to tell people you could get a snow forest.